Welcome, good evening, hello insiders and everyone else that is listening. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the QS Cast. Recording on time, just as I've committed to Thursday evening this week. Again, glad everyone can join in. We have a lot of things that we want to talk about tonight. And by we, I mean Chris and I. Chris, fellow QS writer, is joining us yet again on the podcast. Chris, appreciate you giving us some of your time.
Chaz, yep. Thanks for the invite, as always.
You know, you even brought it up, Chris. How do you feel about the previews thus far? You kind of mentioned this to me earlier in the week when you and I were chatting. Where are you at in terms of what you've seen from War of the Spark thus far?
Oh, it's interesting. I'm going to give two answers to this. The EDH side of me is a little lackluster. My feelings are a little lackluster. There haven't been any Taysa or Niv like legends that have popped up, you know, that are buzzing the community a lot. I think it's actually interesting because there was so much hype with that trailer. That trailer has only been out, 5 days at this point, I think. And it's weird because that trailer came out, everyone was going nuts, and then they're saying it was trending on YouTube, all this stuff. And then here we are on Thursday, and they're kind of slow rolling these spoilers. We got a ton of them on Sunday at the Invitational, and everyone was going nuts. And now we've only been kind of getting just two or three here or there. There really hasn't been anything this week, Monday through Thursday so far anyway, that's been super exciting. So I like the cards. I think what we've seen have been really cool. I think there's going to be a lot of impact to Standard, which is exciting. And I definitely also think there's going to be a lot of new inclusions in the 99, so to speak, of EDH, but haven't seen a legend that's come out like Niv or Taysa yet that's, you know, really got me excited. That's pretty much where I'm at, I would say. I've been practicing, you know, I always have a hard time pronouncing different card names, and I've been practicing Fibblethip. I think that's how you pronounce it, but feel free to clean that up for me. I don't see Bio in here, but
yeah, it's probably not cleaned up. Just
that one's not gonna, yeah. So anyway, I've been practicing that, but otherwise, yeah, no, I haven't been super excited yet about any new archetype in EDH. I am liking a lot of things. You actually mentioned Bolas's Citadel. I totally agree with you. I think that card could make some waves in EDH. It might even make waves in, you know, other formats potentially.
Yeah, so I really do like the premise of the set. And I was kind of like, I don't know about this. Like 36 Planeswalkers seems like kind of nutty. I don't know how I kind of feel about, you know, all of these kind of storylines converging together, and I don't know how that's going to look, but you know what? I've been surprised so far, and I'm at a pretty good spot as to how they kind of navigated and handled, Planeswalkers at every rarity, and kind of introducing all of these different storylines. It wasn't just like, oh, and like, here's like this awesome world, and then the Eldrazi show up for like the, yeah, like, 10th time, and it's like trash, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay. And it's not like that at all. Everything does kind of feel like it has its place, even though this is just coming from like a design and, you know, whatever. This is not really like financially related, but I don't really like the look and feel of like the Eternals. They have like this weird like look, and but that's like, you know, a different topic for another day. But for the most part, I'm liking everything that I'm seeing. I'm with you. Like, they are slow rolling this, and I actually did bring this up in the in the channel when we were all talking about the previews. It's kind of interesting. I don't think I can remember a point where we were talking about a set like an entire month before a release.
Right. Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, I don't think so.
Obviously I could be wrong, but I don't feel like we've been talking about a set like this far out from release. Yeah. I mean, it's an entire month.
It feels like the window keeps getting longer. You know, I actually felt the same way about RNA the last set, Ravnica Allegiance, and now, and I think that one was I could be wrong on this, but and double check it, but I think it was at least 2 or 3 weeks of spoilers for that. And now this one, we're talking basically a full month to pre-release too. It's not even, we're not even talking about release. We're looking at spoilers for 28 days before pre-release. So yeah, it's interesting when they're slow rolling it like this. I can't help but wonder what that's going to do for the set. Like, you know, there's all this hype with the trailer, and then you give a few cards per day. They're saying that everything that gets spoiled each day leads into, I guess, acts within the story. So, you know, yesterday they had the Soren and Nahiri story was mentioned. So I'm sure that'll have like a little snippet in the broader events that are going on. Those were both spoiled. But again, it's like, if we're only getting 4 cards a day for 28 straight days, you kind of wonder, like, what's that going to do to the set sales?
Yeah, I agree. More specifically for, you know, folks that like to kind of play the pre-order game, and for those that, you know, like to kind of find those deals early on, you know, I even brought it up. I was like, you know, I don't know how this is really going to affect it. I don't recall this, you know, us ever like pre-orders and buying cards and like them revealing a set so far out from release. Now it's like a card's going to get hyped and then just like what, sit there for like 2 weeks, right? 3 weeks. And like, then the release, then you finally get the cards, but the cards have been a known quantity for like a month now.
And somebody's already probably play tested the card as a proxy.
And it's not just that. It's like some of these cards just kind of build hype like towards a release only in a couple weeks. And it's easier to kind of sell at a new price point. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but, you know, Teferi is a really good example. You know, you're probably okay if you kind of bought in early enough. But, you know, how long is this thing going to sit at? You know, a card weight that's going to sit at 15, 16 bucks, you know, and then the hype just wears off by the time release happens and, you know, no one really cares anymore, then you can't even sell them for like 10 bucks.
Right? So my opinion on this is to practice patience with the slow rolling. I'll be honest, I don't do a ton of pre-ordering. I might pick 2 or 3 cards that I'll go
in on. I don't as much anymore. And, I got to tell you, the kind of elongated wait time is really making me like pick and choose my battles.
Yeah. Yeah. I think practicing patience with this, Mimoroto mentioned that there's only one spoiled mythic so far. There's been, I think, a couple leaked, you know, so we can, I guess, assume that those are going to be right. But technically, there's only one official spoiler. I think it was Liliana. So, anyway, because of that, you know, you mentioned it with, or we're talking about Teferi, it's a rare, right? Like, I mean, if this set ends up blowing up and is open, let's say it's open like Dominaria was, Teferi from that set was mythic, and it was the chase mythic at that. But can a rare from a big set hold more than $5 to $10? Yeah, I don't know.
I think it certainly can. I'm just more talking about, you know, the amount of time that something is a known piece of information, right? The longer like about a card, you know, if it's, you know, the normal few weeks that we get and then it leads up to a pre-release, like that hype can kind of sustain itself a lot better than kind of dragging this on kind of every single day and waiting over an entire month, because, you know, pre-release is at the end of the month, but you know, official release isn't until April or May?
It's the first weekend of May, I think. Yeah,
right. I'm not entirely sure.
I wonder if it'll have an impact on the LGS side for the pre-release. You know, I wonder if there'll be, I guess it could go both ways, right? People are just so excited. They've been having to wait all this time to play with these cards, and they're, you know, maybe it's just going to be packed and loaded. And there has been a lot of good pre-release numbers, you know, coming in from the last few sets. So hopefully that's the route it goes. But I wouldn't be shocked if the slow roll ends up having the opposite effect, where people are just kind of like, okay, all right. Like, it's, I keep seeing this. I just want to play it on Arena. Let's get to it. Right.
So. Right. It does release on Arena before everyone kind of gets a chance to open this in paper, right? Like,
yeah,
the pre-release for paper, I believe, is roughly the actual release of Arena.
Yes, I think you're right. I think it comes out same day, honestly, or maybe the same weekend anyway.
Interesting. You know, so again, but, you know, trying to wrap this back around, that being said, I do agree, you know, it kind of sucks to get, you know, slow rolled by this. I'm okay either way. I was just more concerned about, you know, the length of time that we kind of have to sit with this information and if it does, in fact, affect the price by these prices by the time the set releases. I mean, normally it always does. Now that like everyone's just kind of mass opening these cards, it does affect the prices a little bit. But I'm just wondering now if it's like kind of hard to kind of lock in those pre-orders and there's still like a few weeks to kind of just sit there and linger.
Yeah. Well, this could be a good segue into one of the questions that that was talked about. I think George or G Tutor said, what have we been speccing on so far? Something like that, right?
Yeah. So, full transparency, and you know, folks always know that I am. I kind of went deep early on into what was it? The Blood Dread Horde Invasion. I pivoted out of that and went into, so that was, I believe, at $5.99 a copy. I pivoted out of that. It is a solid card, but I don't think it's, you know, getting a fair comparison. And I, you know, got out of that and moved into 12 copies of Teferi. So that's all I did at I managed to get 12 of them at $5.99.
That's a great price. Yeah.
So that's all that's it. That's all I got. You know, so I changed the order from Dreadhorde Invasion, or my pre-orders from Dreadhorde Invasion. I believe I got 20 of them, to 12 copies of Teferi, and that's all I've got.
I have not actually pre-ordered a single card, regrettably, on Teferi. As soon as it was spoiled, I was talking to a few folks in Insider, and we were all agreeing that the Teferi looks almost broken, to be honest. It's really good.
Yeah.
I did not actually pre-order it. I actually chased some of the reactionary cards. So I picked up Liliana, the Untouched by Death. I think I got like, I bought 20 copies at like $450. Trying to flip those now. I might just buy list those to take the profits. But generally speaking, oh, and I did grab 4 Thought Lashes when Jace was spoiled. They were super cheap, reserve list, near mint. Hopefully they'll be near mint. Grabbed a few of those as well. But other than that, I've been kind of trying to just be patient with it. I have this feeling that we're going to get another whirlwind, kind of like Sunday was. I feel like they're going to ramp this up and, you know, have another big day where they'll spoil a few mythics. We'll probably get the official Gideon spoiler. And theoretically, I don't think the Bolas spoiler was official either, if I'm not mistaken. So hopefully we'll get that. And I don't know. I'm guessing there's just going to be, we know there's only 3 walkers at Mythic. That's been confirmed by, I think, did Mero confirm that? Someone confirmed that. One of the staff confirmed there's only 3 Mythic walkers, and it was Bolas, Gideon, and Liliana.
Feel like we know them all from that leak, unfortunately. But and then Teferi is the Baya Box promo.
Tezzeret,
right.
Right. So, but that, I mean, that leaves the door open for, I don't know how many mythics are in the set, but we're talking several non-Planeswalker mythics, which, you know, that should leave the door open, especially with the design for this set. I'm guessing there's going to be a few mythics that are going to be pretty potent.
Yeah. On the poster, I believe we, that's been circulating, I believe we know that the gods are, the Amalek gods are in it, so.
I wonder if they should probably be a mythic, too.
They should probably be mythic, yeah. I would assume they're mythic. Sorry. I do also have 20 Vivian's Arc Bow locked in at $2.99 as well.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. I figured at worst case scenario, I break even. But I felt the card out of it has a lot of upside.
I loved it. Yeah. The fact that you can discard it to itself to trigger it is great. It basically mitigates the fact that it's legendary altogether. You could run 4 of those. And if you draw 2 of them, just discard one to the other. Gets better as the game goes on too. It's going to be loved in EDH for sure.
Yeah. It does help that the Verse, I don't know if anyone watches the Versus series on Star City Games, not that it's like the end all be all of, you know, what's going to get played, you know, at release, but it does kind of add to a little bit of the hype when they do kind of showcase these cards. Sometimes, you know, you look at these decks and you're like, okay, it's like, it kind of feels like they're just more previewing cards than trying to build like really solid decks. But I do believe they have identified at least a few times that this card is definitely an engine to be built around. So that is, you know, at least good for its kind of future stock. Anything, other questions? So we covered what we're both pre-ordering. We covered a lot of the preview talk. If you want to just kind of follow along, there's a lot of different discussions about this. I kind of just don't want to like rehash everything, but you know, if you haven't been following along, you know, the three main channels to kind of, you know, get into the discussion on you know, previews and what's further like reactionary for those previews is General, Actionable, and the spoiler chat. Question before we actually kind of start wrapping up here. Do you feel, I don't know if you touched on this when you went into kind of what you're looking at for EDH. How do you kind of feel about specific legends like Tola's Mirror, Friend to Wolves, or something like that, sparking a lot of reactionary stuff? Like, I know there's like here and stuff here and there that popped up the last few days. I personally didn't think Proteus Staff rather would be selling for nearly $15, but it is. So kudos to anyone who got in on that. I personally didn't. Will we see a little bit more of that? I didn't feel like, you're right, like there's like a Tesa to like kind of really rally behind.
Yeah, I definitely haven't seen that yet. Neheb, the latest iteration of that, or I don't remember what it's called, Dreadhorde or Dreadborn.
Dreadhorde Champion.
That's a Dreadhorde Champion. That, I think, is would have been very, very intriguing if it was in Rakdos colors, but it's mono red, so
right.
That hurt that pretty badly. I think most of the cards spoiled, or I should say, all of the cards spoiled that are going to impact EDH are going to be in the 99. I have not seen a new general come out that is going to create a lot of, you know, reactionary buying, sustainable reactionary buying. I was comparing it. I was talking to one of the insiders. I was comparing what I've seen so far to Nikia, which was the number, actually surprisingly, okay, the number two Ravnica Allegiance legend behind Tesa. And Nikia had that little run where there was about, I don't know, a half dozen cards or so, maybe even a little bit more than that, that saw some meaningful gains on like MTG stocks and stuff. But it wasn't really long-term. It wasn't sustainable. Tesa is still selling cards. You're still seeing cards pop up every once in a while. Ogre Slumlord was the latest one that, you know, I think like a week or two ago spiked again up to $4. And so anyway, I just don't see the long-term. I haven't seen a legend get spoiled. That's what I would say is going to get the brewers excited, right? There's some buzz around, you know, a few of these cards, but nothing sustainable, in my opinion, yet.
I think also, since we're talking about it, I think it's also good we can answer another questions here, too. This one from Bio. Do you feel that the Planeswalker matters stuff? Have we seen the kind of end of the kind of hype there? Or can those cards continue to grow as well?
So, yeah, I saw that question.
I have seen Atraxa cool off a little bit, but not much. So a lot of the high upper echelon cards like that, the marquee cards, I feel will kind of stick around the new prices for a little while. But I don't know if we're just going to get a whole nother wave of like of hype.
Oh, here's where my head is at on this. I was actually posting about this earlier in the week. We talked about this card probably 3 weeks ago now. You and I did Deploy the Gatewatch. The foils on that have already doubled. In fact, everything, all both versions of it, the pack and the pack non-foil and the pre-release foil, and then also the non-foil, have all basically doubled. And I think actually the non-foil was maybe even a triple up at this point, because it was like a dollar. You can sell them for $3 to $4 now. That being said, I actually think that the foil version, I get cut out there. I think I did.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
That always happens 30 minutes in for some reason. Deploy the Gatewatch foils, though, I do think still have upside. They have room to run. And the reason for that is because if you look at the EDH rec filters for both Atraxa and Jota and mark it as a Planeswalker filter on EDH, that gives you about, it's like just over 2,000 total between Atraxa and Jota and Planeswalkers. And if you were to do the same with Deploy the Gatewatch, it comes out to 19,000, give or take. It's almost exactly one-to-one to the Super Friends, you know, game, I would say. And so the reason I like that idea of Deploy moving up and potentially even having room to run from the 13 or 14 range is simply because Atraxa, obviously the spike that we see with Atraxa is based on a combination of speculators and some people who want to actually play it that either haven't before or maybe just want to get back into it. And when they go to build that deck, we're going to start seeing a run on some of these major staples for Super Friends, which Deploy the Gatewatch absolutely is. So the short answer to Bio's question is I think most of these cards have peaked, but there are a handful, Deep Glow Skate, Deploy the Gatewatch, even Doubling Season is now hitting. I think someone sold one for $80 direct the other day.
Yeah, it's nuts.
So yeah, that's crazy. That's a non-foil too, which is just unbelievable. But I think there's going to be some of those staples which you're going to see a residual gain on, unless they somehow got reprinted, like in Modern Horizons, for example. I don't know how many of those cards there are that would fit the Modern Horizons. But anyway, that's kind of where my head is at on it. I do think if you can, for the most part, sell out of these, obviously, and take your profits. For the major staples like Deep Glow Skate, Deploy the Gatewatch, I actually think there's still upside on those. And I would, I'm taking some profits and then you know, selling a few and holding on to a few others to see if they go higher. So
I wanted to get to another topic, but we'll kind of cover it at the end. I try to like peruse as many outlets as I can, so I don't know if you ended up seeing this or not, but you know, I can pose it, and it may be a question that we can bring up on another cast or like an insider only cast devoted to it, so I'll link it to you and let you kind of peruse it for now while I'm kind of making my commentary. I do agree on everything you kind of said. I think we need to just kind of be, like you said, just kind of be patient. Let some of the other, you know, previews, I know it's kind of like they're really slow rolling this a lot. We just got to be patient and just kind of see if there's anything else. If the leaks are true, I do feel like that Niv-Mizzet might actually be like the top multicolored general to build around, but I'm not sure. We don't want to go like,
yeah,
we
completely. Probably, it's funny you bring that one up because I was actually talking about that one today as well. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to bring that up on cast yet until it's official.
Yeah, I don't want to totally bring it up until it's agree official. With you, but, though. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, one thing that I can say with confidence is, and this has something to do with just Tulsimir with the Wolves, you know, tribal as well. So far, there's been a lot of relevant creature types spoiled in this. Now, it's been a slow rolling spoiler week so far, but the one thing that stands out to me is we've had four very, very relevant creature types spoiled. Zombies, warriors for Najeela. You've also had the Wolves, which is kind of more of a casual tribal, which everyone always, I think that's one of those tribes kind of like Minotaurs where it's like, man, I just really wish they could get there so I could have a tribal Wolves deck. There's a lot of casual players that would probably say that. And then I said Minotaur, that's the fourth one with Neheb. So I do think that while those are all, when Niv is confirmed, even if it's not that Niv, but we get a Niv legendary creature dragon, that's another very relevant creature type. The point I'm getting at here is focus on cards that are relevant to tribal decks. That's what I've started kind of looking at, is to see if there's any, I just started kind of looking at that this morning to see if there were any cards out there that are already kind of low supply that could have, you know, future upside if all these tribes really do continue to get spoiled. The gods you mentioned, I think someone was talking, you know, it's baseless speculation, but the potential that they come back as zombie gods, right? Like how huge that would be. So anyway, that's kind of my where I'm at with it right now. It's too early to make any decisions, but I'm keeping an eye on all these creature types because they are all relevant and they could have a meaningful impact, you know, over the next couple weeks here.
Awesome. So I think we got through most of the questions. I just want to double check. Pre-orders. Okay. So we covered the previews. We covered pre-orders, what we're pre-ordering, you know, kind of the pacing of the previews and how that may affect sales. I think we're kind of in this spot to say it may affect it, but it may also not, like on the some of the marquee cards, like Teferi, you should be okay there. But some of this other stuff will have to really pick up some considerable hype to kind of keep that going. Theater brought up a really good point too. So what's the general opinion on underplayed, you know, now that we're kind of in the midst of War of the Spark, there is a rotation kind of on the horizon. There is Magic 2020 after this.
Right.
If you're, I agree to, I'm going to get to the question, but we talked about this, I think even Tark and I, about like rotation and stuff. If you're looking to buy into cards, make sure they're from Ravnica at this point, okay?
Absolutely.
Stuff that's not going to be rotating at, you know, any point. Like starting from Ravnica on is going to be your best bet. Especially Ravnica stuff, because it's going to be like suddenly the base, like three sets of standard. That being said, what's the general opinion on underplayed and cheap mythics from Ravnica Allegiance and Guilds? What's the first?
Guilds of Ravnica?
Is it literally Guilds of Ravnica?
It's Guilds of Ravnica, yeah.
cards like Emergency Powers, Ravager Worm, Chance for Glory, March of the Multitudes, and Haunt of Hightower. I think Ravager Worm was in one of those supplemental decks.
Was, yep.
I love the card, but I just don't, you know, with that supplemental printing, I just can't see it going anywhere. I don't know, like, Emergency Power doesn't seem, like, too, like, that good. I don't know, like, it's a big splashy mythic, but I don't know if I want to, like, suddenly buy a lot of copies just because it's cheap.
The only reason I would give clout to Emergency Powers is because it's in the blue-white, you know, color combo, which the new Teferi could theoretically just keep the whole blue-white control thing rolling right into the new rotation. So I don't know that for sure, obviously, but it is also – Emergency Powers is also a pretty cool card in EDH, which helps your floor, obviously, but
– Yeah, that is true. But to keep answering the question, looking back, I mean, I just kind of feel like there are some really strong mythics to really look at. I got burned on Scargan Hellkite at this point. I was buying, like, I bought, I think, 4 of them at 7 and then another 4 of them at 5. I mean, I'm happy to just keep buying them. Like, I think they're like $3 or less at this point.
Yeah, well, first of all, I have a bias for dragons as it is. I love dragons.
But it just kind of feels like one of those cards that is going to be solid. Like,
it's a cool, first of all, the art on it is amazing. Second of all, it's very potent, right? I mean, it's the type of card you can cast, you can give it Riot and take out a Planeswalker almost as if you're casting a Lava Axe, but you get to keep it, right? So, you can take out walkers out of your hand pretty quickly. I do like like the Hellkite. It's holding a higher price than I would have expected. You know, it's around $4 still without a lot of play. I think one of the things that holds Hellkite back is it's proved not to be able to be run as more than like a 1 or 2 of. I don't think that when it was play tested as like a 3 or 4, from what I remember reading, it never really stuck. It was kind of a dead draw if you had 2 of them in your hand. So.
That being said, though, there was a, I feel like there was a Grand Prix, Grand Prix Kyoto, where there was a couple solid Gruul mid-range lists with at least 3 or 4 copies of this card. And just looking at that list, short of a couple of cards from Ixalan, like, this, that feels like a really good starting deck for rotation.
Yeah. I'm going to borrow that point, the starting deck for new rotation, because I agree. I think that one could definitely be, it doesn't lose much at all. So
yeah,
that obviously helps it. One of the other things we always see at rotation do pretty well early on in the new, you know, as the meta shifts, is aggro. And between Tolsimir today, and then also Tristani, Discordant, and March of the Multitudes, the whole idea of just a green-white, kind of like a tokens, I feel like green-white tokens is always relevant every 2 years, and I feel like it's probably about been 2 years since the last time. I'm going to point out Tristani, Discordant specifically for one really minor, but I think very important reason. It says at the beginning of your end step, each player gains control of all creatures they own. We've already seen a few different decks lately in standard. What is that blue card? Something manipulation. The one where you can take like creatures and planeswalkers. Or no, I'm sorry. It's the one from Ixalan. I can't think of the name of it. But it's
where it was played at the championship.
Yeah, and you can take creatures with two blue and X or something.
It's like something wave or something. I don't know.
Entrancing Melody, that's it. Thank you, chat. I was blanking on that one. But anyway, those two, and then you figure you also just got this new spoiler. It was the two blue and a red exchange control of two permanents that share a type.
Good version of Switcheroo.
Yeah, I mean, three mana is amazing. I feel like that card could be really good. But call me crazy, I feel like that ability to be able to get your creatures back if someone starts to go that route and use those shenanigans, that could be a very interesting, you know, wording just to kind of keep in the back of our minds as that meta shakes out. So,
yeah. I don't know about the Haunt of Hightower. It was, you know, and just kind of looking back through the question, it was a buy a box promo. It would probably be more tailored to see play in Commander. I never gave it too much credence. I don't know about you, Chris. I don't know if it made much of a splash.
I really did not. Yeah. I've kind of written it off, but I shouldn't say that's a bad thing, or, you know, that it's a bad card without really having any research. I don't really have a comment on it either way, to be honest with you. Buy a box always does help it. Obviously the supply is going to be lower there, but I agree. I think if I remember the card correctly, I'm just pulling it up here just to take a look at it. I remember thinking, I know it was a vampire. I remember thinking it was more of an EDH play.
As far as Dovin, I mean, trust me, don't get me wrong. I love me some three converted mana cost walkers, but realistically, how many Dovin are you going to play now that we have Teferi? Right.
That's it. Yeah. They're in the same. The only reason I think Dovin and Teferi can coexist is because they likely would fit different strategies, right? I think Dovin would go. I think there might still be enough artifact support between now and rotation to make it happen. I was really high on the idea of that whole Dovin Tezzeret from M19.
Yeah, I was definitely feeling that
and
too.
And then Karn with the Mox Amber. I was like really high on that shell, and it still has time, right?
Doesn't
I
mean, it's seem like it's getting off mines, the ground. But, yeah. Although, you know, we do keep Tezzeret for a little bit longer. We do keep Mox Amber for a little bit longer. Those are going to eventually rotate. But for now, at least, we have Dovin Tezzeret from Corset.
Yeah.
Mox Amber and Big Tezzeret from.
Right. Buy a box Tezzeret. Yep. No, it's,
I mean, if something can't pull together from that, then it's just not going to happen.
But it's probably dead in the water at that point.
It probably is too, but you know, we'll see. I doubt it.
Citadel an artifact? Tell me if I'm wrong.
Bolas is Citadel artifact. Yes,
it is an artifact.
Yes, it is.
So maybe those. I don't know if it's some type of an Esper artifact deck. I guess I don't know. Anyway, we're just throwing ideas out there. But
yeah, I don't want to get like too off track.
Yeah,
but
me neither.
I don't know. Like I'm not even like. There are undercosted mythics, and I want, you know, I feel the same way. Like, we should always go back and kind of reevaluate those. But as of yet, I'm just not seeing something that, like, sparks me to go back and say, okay, I want to, like, get back into this again. Like, maybe March of the Multitudes has probably the best chance because it's already proven itself that it can get to that level. Short of that though, like, nah, I'm staying away from like cards like Chance for Glory, Like Lazav, the Multifarious, you know, all this other stuff. Like maybe Divine Visitation, but it is kind of expensive. I love me some Tristani Discordant. I actually think it's probably a little bit better than Tolas Amir. Like you'd probably want to play more copies of Tristani.
I think so.
Tolas Amir.
You could theoretically, you might play both of them at like a one or two of, but yeah, I agree.
I feel like if you're going to like afford that five drop, like three or four copies, if you're playing three, you probably want to go two Tristani, one Tolas Amir, or if you're going to go four, it's three Tristani, one Tolas Amir.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, the only other one that I can even really think is cheap and all, but is very sneakily like flying under the radar with all this like kind of zombie stuff is, well, Vraska actually has got pretty cheap and is now pseudo trending a little bit with all these three converted mana costs, like all these different planeswalkers. I would definitely be looking at that. It's sub $5.
That's a great call.
It's sub $5. And it just seems so much better now.
That is a fantastic call. I completely forgot about it. It's basically a worst case scenario. Yeah, Vraska
Golgari Queen, it looks so good right now.
Worst case scenario, it's an abrupt decay, essentially, right? I mean, that's like worst case. Best case, you're talking about a walker that can stick around and turn your lands into draws and things like that. So
yeah, like all of a sudden, it just has so many targets, right?
Yeah, that's a great call out.
Yeah, like the other one is, you know, sticking to kind of that green-black. And no, this is not just because I'm, you know, the green homer. I do actually like Vraska in a standard where seemingly all these really high-powered three-mana walkers are kind of running around. But Underrealm Lich, too.
That was like, the one that was on my radar. Yep.
It can, like, randomly just get a mass token, like, a mass counters. And I don't know. Like it just like randomly just gets stuff, and it's indestructible like at will, and it's a relevant creature type with all this hype.
I like Underrealm Lich quite a bit for EDH. First of all, I mean, I'm just gonna start there because
Amass's Army. My bad. I read no. It can't get Amass counters, but it plays well with Amass. I feel like.
Yeah, it also
it feels good to play that alongside Dreadhorde Invasion. I mean, randomly, if you get that lifelink, it kind of can neutralize the pay life clause of that card.
And it's a great engine. I mean, it's a great card filtering engine on top of it. That's what I was going to say, is just the first half of its abilities to be able to scry through three of the cards that you might be drawing up over your next few turns and pick one is super good. And we obviously know graveyards are always relevant. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, we've already seen some zombies. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some more cards coming in spoilers that'll help it out as well. But yeah, I love that. I love Underrealm Lich in EDH too. It's about as cheap as it probably can get.
It's at its all time low.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much
and
more.
I wanted to confirm if it was ever like printed in a supplemental product.
No, it was not, because I've been watching it for a long time. It definitely was not.
So I don't know. It just kind of feels like the Golgari stuff, Vraska and Underrealm Lich.
I like
Vraska. Talk about undercosted mythics.
Yep. Yeah, no, I like Vraska a lot.
I do too. Yeah, that's a good comment too. Like Lich in these kind of long games, it is really good for like that super long haul type of game.
Grind it out. Yeah.
And yeah, because if you are going that kind of grind out strategy with the Dreadhorde Invasion, you might not always get the lifelink to connect, but man, it will feel good.
Oh.
And I don't know, like, again, something about, like, even Sorin, like, changes the dynamic. Like, you can go, like, Sorin into Underrealm Lich, and it's virtually indestructible all the time.
Yeah, because you're going to be gaining the life to offset, for sure.
Huh. You know, I really do like that. I like Sorin, too. I think Sorin is going to be very sneakily good. It can't kill creatures, but a lot of these, I don't know how many of the uncommon walkers we'll see play, but a lot of them tick down to one, and it'll just feel so good to just, like, ping them for one and just get them up out of there.
Yep.
Even some of the rare walkers, like, ping down to one.
And the ping gains you a life on top of it, which is awesome, so...
Yeah, it's like They play their Teferi. They need to bounce something to save it. It goes to one. You play Sorin. You kill Teferi.
Right.
And Sorin's at six.
Actually, Sorin, you're right, because Sorin's minus X works really well with Underrealm Lich as you fill your graveyard with Lich's ability.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, there you go. We just brewed a combo there.
I don't know, man. Sorin into Underrealm Lich just feels so good.
I like that.
That has to be that should be a thing. If it's not, I'd be pretty upset. But who knows?
So I wanted to talk about one more standard card.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's kind of get into the last kind of bits here.
Yeah, yeah. So I wanted to bring up. It's been buzzing the channels for probably like I don't know the fourth day in the last 2 weeks or so today, which is Kaya, the Orzhov Usurper.
Yeah. Crazy.
I am shocked at how many decks it's showing up in Modern now. I don't remember. I apologize. I know someone posted this in general chat. I was trying to dig it, but I did grab the link. Someone in general chat mentioned this might be a good topic for Cass. I totally agree. Kaya is all over recent competitive Modern League 5-0 decks as a 2-of.
Yep.
She's showing up in Azban. She's showing up in Esper Control now, too. The fact that she hits Death Shadow is huge. Proven itself in Modern already. And I am already also starting, I know this is kind of fringe, but she's already starting to show up in some Legacy Vintage as well, simply because she can hit not only Death Shadow and Legacy, but you can also hit all of the mana rocks that are, you know, basically like Moxes and Vintage and things like that. So Kaya has really exploded onto the scene here. We were talking about this at the beginning of Cast Jazz, whether can she hit $20 in her standard lifetime? I wouldn't bet against it personally. I will say I was on like the most bullish end of the extreme with Kaya when she was first spoiled. I went in pretty hard on the Mythic editions. I think some of the folks in here know that. I was pretty transparent about it, but I've sold most of those. I still have a couple. I am holding out because I personally think she can, at the Mythic edition level, I think she can hit $100 to be perfectly blunt.
Yes.
And I think the pack non-foils absolutely could get to $20 with the type of multi-format support she's starting to show. So.
Absolutely. I do think $20 is more of a possibility than ever. Certainly not trending the other way because folks are still buying. And you can kind of see this throughout sale reporting. People buying up each, you know, when I saw a couple sale posts even in here, folks were going to send them to buy lists and people just trying to scoop them up. And just, you know, kind of out there, like, again, just from the sale reporting, such great data to kind of follow. Folks are putting these up on TCG and they're just going. Like, folks are sending them in. I mean, buy lists are almost nearly at TCG market, right?
Right. I think so. Yeah, they're close. They
that's just a really good indication that everyone wants this card stocked.
Exactly. They're having
this
a hard
card
time.
Actually deals with a mass.
I think
I got my wires crossed on that. I got my wires crossed on that. This actually deals with a mass randomly. Like, there's just so many different applications for this card.
That's the
and I feel good
it.
About this because, you know, while I was able to pivot and not be obstinate about Arclight Phoenix, like I definitely did not give that card any love, but I did buy into it and I was like, you know what? I'm convinced. If I'm wrong, fine, but I'm going to just admit that I'm wrong here and buy in. I definitely was like, hey, I think Kaya is really not, you know, complete garbage like everyone's giving it crap for.
It was funny because when it was first spoiled,
I'm starting to learn, like, as you go along and even like just outside the MTG market, when everyone is agreeing on something, go the opposite direction.
Do the opposite. Exactly.
Yeah, seriously. Like,
it's
if
true.
The wide, like, this is definitely true in the Magic community, but if like everyone is like so 100% all in on an idea, do the exact opposite, like, and go the way other direction with it. If they think Kyle was like this unplayable trash, I went in and bought copies. I was like, you know what? I don't know. Like, they didn't make this card to be trash, so it's obviously going to have some applications.
Yep.
You know, at the very worst, you know, I get burned for like $4 or $5 and But I think this car is going to have a lot of applications, and lo and behold, it has.
Worst.
It just felt like, you know, and again, this is from playing the game a long time. This felt like one of those mythics that was totally 100% like foreshadowed mythic. Like, it's going to suck now, but it's going to be really good here very soon.
Right? You're going to figure it out when you go ahead
exactly.
And plus her up and exile two Arclight Phoenixes. You're going to realize, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Wow. This is like really insane. Really
good. I exiled two of their best cards, got two life, and I'm going to hurt them for and punish them when I alter later. So,
$20 is definitely a real possibility. I think it will, I personally think it will happen.
I do too. I think the momentum shows pretty strong.
At least like 15 high teens.
Right.
I think it's definitely like trending in that direction.
There
might start being some pushback at maybe like 15, 16, 17, 18 bucks. Like once it starts hitting those thresholds, like there might be some pushback.
Yep.
I don't know, but it does feel like it can do it.
The multi-format aspect is why I think the Mythic Edition itself is still still got lots of.
And remember, Chandra, 4-mana cost Chandra, was in a set with Masterpieces or Inventions.
Yep.
And a lot of its price tag was bolstered by, you know, its like modern applications.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's a really good point. Yeah. I mean, it was maybe seeing one of play in random standard decks, but it was still holding a $20 price tag because of modern.
Yeah, it was almost at $40 for
I think you're right. It might have even been 40 at one point.
It was something crazy. Wow. So that was an imprint mythic with Masterpieces.
Right.
You know,
Bio brings up a good point too. He mentioned that the pack foils themselves have gone, you know, they've gone up quite a bit. I don't know what the multiplier is there, but it's probably not that high to the Mythic Edition version. And I will say this, the Mythic Edition art is gorgeous. It's really honestly,
it's incredible. It's incredible. Have you seen it in person?
I have a bunch of them. Yes, it is.
it's you know what? Listen, I'm still sitting. No joke. I'm still sitting on the six that I got.
I think I've sold
I am very, very, very tempted to keep the Kaias like for myself. Regardless of what happens,
like I might just like frame one because the way that the art pops off the page the page off the cardboard. But
I liked it from the start. I'm like, you know what? I don't care if it's like $10. I might just keep this for myself. This looks so cool.
Anyway, wrapping up.
I digress.
The short of this is, I think we're both very. It sounds like we're both very bullish. A lot of the folks who were less bullish are starting to see the applications now, and I'm starting to see that data. She's showing up everywhere. That's kind of the point. Is she's showing up all over the place? Yeah. Definitely, still has room to run. Your point about her hitting a mass means that she'll still likely be relevant after War of the Spark comes out, which is also really important. And
that seems, you know, like every like set or every kind of meta shift, like she this card gains more applications.
Yeah, that's the interesting part.
It definitely is interesting.
Every time a card of one or less converted mana cost that's relevant is printed, boom, she's relevant, right? Anytime a graveyard strategy is relevant, boom, she's relevant. So she's going to be good for a long time, it seemed like.
Yeah. Okay, we're coming up on time here. I hope we answered everyone's questions. You know, didn't want to digress, but, you know, we try to kind of cover this with a little bit of, you know, discussion about the cards, the financial implications as well. I wanted to kind of look at all these different, outlets, like even mentioned the kind of the Versus series there. Like I try to provide as much as I can to insiders. And I think at this point, everyone kind of knows that. So some of this talk, while not 100%, you know, financially relevant, I think we did a good job of kind of staying on track, but we do like to talk about the kind of potential of some of these cards just, you know, outside, because that's what you kind of have to look at when it comes to its relevancy in a format. Cards to consider, and I think this also goes right back to the question of are there undercosts in Mythics? Yes, I believe Vraska Golgari Queen is one of them. To a lesser extent, Underrealm Lich. That's more of like kind of a niche, you know, it could fit into this kind of zombies theme. It does feel like it plays well with certain a certain couple of the cards that were revealed to us so far. Sorin, for instance. But Vraska Golgari Queen definitely feels much better in a meta of, you know, three mana walkers. Teferi, you know, Vivian, all these different like three mana stuff, especially walkers, even the uncommons too, may, you know, see some play. And she and Vraska just kind of cleans all that up.
I love that pick. I'll throw my two out there. They're obviously going to be more EDH driven. You and I were talking about one of them before the cast started, the Scarab God card to keep an eye on. If we get more,
I'm going to co-sign that because we talked both talked about that.
That one's definitely we're both going to co-sign one. That. We were both on it.
Co-signed. Yeah. I like that one a lot.
Yeah. We were both on this one. It seems like, but, the short of it is the zombies, right? I mean, we know what the Scarab God can do. It's a potent general. It's great in the 99. Zombies, there is buzz around zombies purely because we've gotten a few spoiled already. Anticipation for basically for these gods to the Amonkhet gods to be spoiled is high. And I think there's a lot of speculation, although albeit baseless at this time, that they could be zombie gods, which would be just very, very you know, influential on zombies as a whole, if that actually happens. But I would keep an eye on that one. And then this is a little bit of a switch up, but I was talking about creature type strategies and tribal things. And the card that stood out to me, which interestingly has been, I feel like, hovering at this price point forever. And I'm really surprised by it, but it's Defense of the Heart. There's two foil printings, only one regular printing. It's a card that for whatever reason has always kind of just been stuck in, stuck in gear here. But I really like the Judge foils very specifically. The Judge's
combo. They look really nice.
And that's exactly it. The aesthetics on them are very, very nice. Especially if you can get one that's not cloudy. The price point is actually pretty attractive compared to the Urza's. I think it's Urza's Destiny is the other printing.
Yes.
It's about $30 for the Judge promo, whereas you're talking closer to like, if you're getting a near mint, I'm sorry, it's Urza's Legacy, not Destiny. Legacy version, even in lightly played, is $50 and goes up from there. I do like the card in general, though. I like both of those. I like the non-foil. It is probably a decent candidate to see a reprint in non-foil, which is why I'm calling the foil specifically. So,
talking about the Scarab God again, do you like what's your priority there?
Good question. Yeah, we talked about this a little bit.
Invocation,
I think I would
foil or non-foil.
I think I'm going.
Like, what's your priority there of those three? I personally feel like you mentioned before we started recording, for those that were listening, first of all, I think some of the hype, like why Locust God foils were bought out randomly, had to do maybe a little bit with the Bolas's Citadel. Like that kind of interaction. I don't know if like that has anything to do with it.
That might, yeah.
But you said it yourself. The pack foil version looks much nicer than the invocation. I don't know if the pack foil increasing is, you know, it causes the invocation to also increase. But I feel the adverse for Scarab God. I personally feel like the invocation looks a lot better than the pack foil. But the pack foil is like $20.
That's why
the normal is 10. So
that's the reason why I thought the pack foil might have the most upside here. I agree with you. I have not seen the Scarab God in person, so I can't speak to the aesthetics. The Locust God.
I've had a couple that I flipped. They look really nice. They actually look pretty cool.
Yeah, the Locust God, I have one myself in one of my EDH decks, and I have one of the pack foils. I might just, I don't know. I will figure that out. But regardless, the fact that you're looking at only a $20 buy-in on the pack foil Scarab God and a $10 plus, it's actually slightly over 10 now. There's like one copy for $9.99, but I could see that pack foil having some upside. I just like Scarab God in general. I really do.
I do as well. It just kind of feels like one of those cards that's just going, you know, totally dropped off because it doesn't have that standard following anymore, and it was just such a powerhouse. But it's really damn good in casual formats.
Absolutely.
And it just kind of feels like one of those cards that will just continue to trend until it's reprinted. if it's reprinted at all for a while, because apparently, you know, it can take a while for some of these cards. I mean, look at Send Triplets. Like, that card's going to be $60.
It just keeps going up.
All right. Great cards to consider this week. I think that's going to wrap it up. This will likely get condensed a little bit. We're just under an hour. Folks, thanks so much for joining in. Chris, thanks for giving you so much of your time. Appreciate the topics. Great questions for this week. Keep them coming, and we'll just continue to keep grinding. We may jump back on for a quick segment to talk about a couple things on a insider only cast. You know, Chris and I are discussing a couple things. So, that's going to wrap it up for tonight's weekly cast. This will get posted very soon. Thanks everyone for joining tonight. Chris, you have a good one. All right.
Yeah, you too, Chaz. Thanks again.
Yep. Everyone else, take care.
Thanks, everyone.
Enjoy yourselves.